powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
All right, joining us now from Seahawks practice, Virginia Mason Athletic Center, where another day of training camp is about to commence. Justin Coleman back here for another stint in Seattle. How's it feel being back?
It feels amazing. I'm enjoying being around the guys and all around the coaches, and also just this atmosphere. So everything's going great.
How are things different this time around? Pete Carroll, obviously he's still here, but you got some other coaches. How are things changed a bit?
Honestly, it's really just, you know, the players and the people that's around. You know, the organization's still the same, the energy's still the same, and you know, we just got new players come in who's looking to, you know, prove themselves. That's it.
Does it feel different without Russell Wilson, or is it less noticeable on the defensive side of things?
You know, honestly, it is. It's different, but you know, we're gonna make the most of it.
What's it like in the slot? A lot of people don't understand. You know, they think it's the same as being on the outside. Kind of take people into what it's like working in that tight space.
Oh, man. See, they don't know that you're really a linebacker slash DN slash safety slash cornerback. No, but it's tough. But, you know, once you get the hang of it, you can kind of put yourself in positions to make a lot of huge plays. And, you know, I kind of think of it as a, you know, a cornerback moving inside to play, you know, safety. However, you know, you're covering guys. I feel like you're covering all types of guys, you know, right, from tight ends to running backs to, you know, receivers as well. So, you know, it gets difficult.
Do you think you changed the way that people see that position? Because there was a while there where you were so dominant here in Seattle, and obviously you're back, so we have yet to see the start of the regular season, so I'm using past tense, but I'm assuming it's still present.
Yeah.
And I feel like, maybe it's just me from my point of view, but I feel like the people, the way my friends were talking about slot corners changed because of that. Do you feel that?
Honestly, I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah.
I just go out there and do what I have to do and give it all I got, you know. And just look at it in the end, and, you know, sometimes it turns out to be something great and sometimes, you know, not so great, but honestly, I just feel like I don't think I changed the game of football the way I play, but it's all about effort, you know, effort to put you in a position to make a lot of plays anyway.
What do you think about this young talent you guys got out here? How's that looking?
I'm excited to see these guys. You know, they've been making a lot of plays. You know, they just got amazing abilities. You know, I just think about Kobe and Tariq, you know, with their abilities, you know, to just play the ball. And, you know, Tariq fast as crap, you know. you know, these guys, I'm just looking forward to see these guys make plays, you know, during real game and stuff. So
he's one of those guys where, like, I'll be watching something else in practice and out of the corner of your eye, you're like, who? Like,
yeah.
He's like a head taller than everyone.
Definitely.
And somehow faster than everyone. I mean, he's one of those guys where you're like, how are kids doing this now? What are you guys eating? How is this happening?
Yeah, see, that's why they call him the Avatar.
They call him the Avatar?
he said, call me the Avatar. So I'm like, cool, that's your name now.
Wait, hang on. Did Tariq Woolen ask to be called the Avatar? You can't make your own
He not necessarily asked. He just kind of was like, well, they call me Avatar. So, so I'm like, all right, that's your name then.
So now you've been in the league for a while. Obviously, you're a vet on this team. You're mentoring some of these guys out here. Throughout your career, was there anybody who kind of took you under their wing and showed you the ropes?
I feel like it was quite a few guys, but, you know, the first guy to come to mind was my rookie year, Terrence Newman.
Yep.
A wonderful ball player and person overall. And he kind of, you know, came to me and was like, you know, I feel like you're going to be a really, you know, huge asset to this team, and you're going to be a great football player. And I see it in you. And, you know, that right there just gave me a little bit more confidence just to, you know, give it a little bit more on the field and stuff. And, you know, I had other guys, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, mm-hmm. Even Malcolm Butler, you know, I had guys that come through to kind of guide me how to be a pro, how to go about it the right way.
So Tariq Woolen wants to go by Avatar. Have you ever had a nickname?
See, I can't tell you all that.
What? Why? Is it not safe for air?
It's not safe for me.
Justin, I think you should tell us what the nickname is.
Oh, man. No, I'm going to hold that one.
We'll probably hear about that later. Can I ask where the nickname came from? Is it funny? Is it making fun of you? Is it like, I don't need anyone to be calling me this nickname?
Honestly, I feel like it just doesn't represent who I am.
Okay.
Right now.
Right now.
Maybe back then, but currently it's not. It doesn't represent who I am.
Please tell us after we get off the air.
I got you.
Okay,
I will.
Good.
It's growth. We grow and we mature as men. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah.
So what about this defense, man? You know, they're making an emphasis going to the 3-4 rather than a 4-3. You still see 4-3 principles and stuff out there. Is it that much different? How are you seeing that?
You know, I feel like it gives the D line a chance to make plays as well, but they have to hold it on their own, you know, when it comes to, you know, run plays. Mm-hmm. And then it gives the safeties opportunities to, you know, make plays from deep, you know. So they do a good job examining, you know, the defense to figure it out. And, you know, I Drew got an arm, Gino got an arm, those guys, you know, they're doing what they need to do, you know. I feel like I try to intimidate them.
Right.
I feel like I try to intimidate them. They're not intimidated by certain things, but, you know, they do what they have to do.
Are you a trash talker?
Only if you're talking trash to me, you know.
I don't know many wide receivers that talk trash. Do wide receivers talk trash?
Often.
Oh, yeah.
Often.
Sure.
Really?
For sure.
Often. I'm not even going to name any, but they talk trash often.
I think you should. Name a team.
Name a team.
Which team's receivers talk the most trash?
Our team.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
I'm glad you put that out there because they make receivers seem like, you know, like we're not.
I see you guys
don't
as
get
the
active
strong,
sometimes,
silent,
you know?
Kind of like, I'm above it, which is why I like DBs more.
Yeah. Nah, DBs be talking.
Yeah, that's
no,
a part of the competitor.
It's creativity. Yeah, yeah. It's creativity. It's passion. I've wondered if receivers, you know, can you guys be quick enough with words, not just, you know, getting off the line?
I don't know. I feel offended low key right now, Stace. But it's like,
I'm just saying what I'm saying.
Hey, so there's a lot of speed on this team. I look at all the levels, the D-line, the second level, the third level. Is this one of the fastest defense you've been a part of?
I feel like it is. Yeah. You know, I've never seen guys fly like this. And, you know, when you say speed, I honestly think of JB. Because he just be flying to the ball, you know, and everything he does is relentless. So I don't know. We got some fast guys all over the field. We have even Big Monet. He as heavy as he is, he's running to the ball fast as crap. So I enjoy this team and seeing the speed that they bring.
Puna, too, for being a bigger guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not, like, super tall, but he's fast. Like, when you watch him get after the quarterback, he's going to have a couple sacks this year.
Yeah.
Book it. Yes, sir. Tell me, kind of take us back. I'm just looking back at your first, you know, tenure here in Seattle at some of your biggest moments. Would you rather get in on a sack, like some kind of cornerback sneak or whatever, or get a pick?
What's
more satisfying?
A pick more satisfying, honestly.
Yeah.
Especially with the position I'm in. So I feel like a sack is for a lineman. Pick is for DB, so
fair.
That's the only time you get like real credit, unless it's, you know, you got to talk about that though. When you talk about that, then it changes.
You've had a couple stops in your career. What makes Seattle special?
I don't know. It's just a place I feel like I belong. You know, every time I'm here, I'm at my happiest, and I feel like I play my best. So why not go to a place where you feel like you're happy and play your best? So,
is it something about the environment? Is it the atmosphere? Is it the coaching? Like, does anything here feel different?
It's funny because my brother just got here today and he was like, man, the air smells and feels a lot different. I was like, I agree. And, you know, that's the only thing I could think of that's different. But, you know, the way I feel like the people here, you know, are more laid back. You know, and they care about this football team, and, you know, that's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, so I'm looking at, again, I just love the movement that I see with this defense. You mentioned JB kind of running the show there in the middle. How's Cody Barton looking out there? This is like his first chance to really solidify himself as a starter and make some plays.
Cody definitely, you know, stepping up and doing what he needed to do. He's one of those guys who can run as well and physical, strong. You know, he got a good understanding of the defense, and, you know, I can see him making a lot of plays this year.
All right. He is Justin Coleman. Justin, we're happy to have you back here in Seattle. We're glad you like it because we're excited to watch you play this year. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. No problem.
Do you think that nickel corner in general, I know you liked Justin's description of it. Do you think it's a position that's not well understood? I would say almost anything in the slot receiver / nickel corner.
Yeah, I think it's not well understood because of exactly how he explained it. He goes, you're a linebacker, you're a safety. Like, you're asked to do a lot. You can set the edge on one play, which means funnel everything inside, get wider than the widest. You could guard a tight end. You can guard a slot receiver. You can take a running back out the backfield. You can drop into coverage. Like, there's so much that they're asking you to do. Mm-hmm. And typically, those aren't, like, really big guys either. So you might be outmatched sometimes as far as weight. So, yeah, I love the way that he described it. If you are somewhat of a football mind, I think that puts it in perspective a little bit.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts of the interview, is just the description of that. And also, toward the end of the interview with Justin Coleman, Seahawks corner was talking about his decision to come back to Seattle. And that it's just, we've heard from so many people, yeah, Seattle's just different. It's a different place. And sometimes I do this kind of, like, and I've only ever covered Seattle. So sometimes I do this kind of pause where I'm like, okay, really? Is that something that every team, no matter who you are, every player on every team is going to be like, yep, this place is different. This place is great. But I do think there is a layer to Seattle, to Pete Carroll's program, that is a bit different.
He said he's his happiest when he's here.
Yeah.
That alone should let you know just the energy that in the culture that you get when you're in Seattle, win or lose. And I think that's going to be tested the most this year because they're not expected to win. It's going to be a tough season. We'll see what they do with it. But that's what you have to lean on now, is the culture and the energy. And so far, it feels good over there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, like, how do you not make losing fun? Losing's never fun. And Pete Carroll's someone who loves to win more than anything, right? We've heard win forever as his motto, his entire theme to coaching, to life. So you're not making losing fun, but I'm curious to see how you curate a fun, competitive atmosphere where people are excited and being pushed and inspired when you are struggling.
Yeah, and that's going to be key because we go out to VMAC all the time, right? And the energy is on point. They're 0-0, right? They're trying to figure out roles on this team. Coaches are amped up. There's so much potential in this group. I would love to go out there a week after a loss just to see if that energy is maintained. Like. Pete Carroll himself is going to have to do some growing because he's in a situation he's never been in here. He did go 7-9 that one year, but they went to the playoffs.
Yeah. And the last time it was like a losing season was in like the 90s with the Jets. Cause at USC he was solid. I mean, you have to go back to like 1994 to find a Pete Carroll team that really, really struggled. So it'll be a new challenge for him too. All right. Fascinating conversation, and Seahawks cornerback Justin Coleman getting us started on that one. Right now though, let's get to headline rewrites.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, against all better judgment, the Cleveland Browns will start Deshaun Watson in their preseason opener. What's the real headline?
And against your better judgment, you're going to watch. Now, there are some people that are saying, yeah, I'm watching no matter what. I don't care. And then there are other people that feel uncomfortable with the way the NFL is handling the Deshaun Watson situation with what Deshaun Watson did. And yet we'll be watching. And I, to be completely honest with you guys, full transparency, am one of those people. I'm clearly uncomfortable with what Deshaun Watson has been accused of doing and feel that the 6-game suspension didn't encapsulate everything, the severity of what he did. All of that being said, I'm fascinated to know what he looks like after being out for a year. I know that he's immensely talented. It's a very weird, complicated feeling as NFL fans.
I'm definitely going to watch, and I'm going to watch because, one, the situation is out of my control. I have my opinion on it. I don't think he should be out there. He should probably be suspended a year. But there's still Amari Cooper out there. There's still Nick Chubb. There's still Kareem Hunt. You know, like, there's still reasons to watch his game, and I'm with you. I want to see if he's rusty or not. Mm-hmm. And honestly, this is the thing that the Cleveland Browns needed to do, because you don't know if you're going to see this guy again 6 games or a year. Rip the Band-Aid off and say, look, get used to it. He is going to be here eventually, whether you like it or not, and it makes it more intriguing. And I think the haters are going to jump on it if he does not play well.
Oh,
so that gives him even more incentive to watch that thing.
Yeah.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Tom Brady has excused himself from Bucs training camp and is not expected to return until after their preseason game on August 20th and potentially maybe not even until week one of the regular season. So what's the real headline?
Nobody needs to panic, but everybody will. Of course they will. It's Tom Brady. He's going to dominate headlines just as he is today. Go to ESPN. One of the top stories you're going to see. Tom Brady is out. Where is he gone? He's MIA, out for a personal reason. Look, this guy has played for 20 plus years in the NFL and done so effectively. Wish him the best with whatever it is that he's dealing with and hope that everything's fine. But I am not worried about Tom Brady being ready for the season.
No, in the words of Jerry Maguire, I'm not going to do what everyone thinks I'm going to do and freak out. I'm not going to do that. And why am I not going to freak out? This is the GOAT. I just hope that everything at home is okay. He doesn't just dismiss himself for simple reasons. There has to be something. So as a person, I hope everything's good at home. As a football player, we know Tom Brady's going to be ready to go. He can show up an hour before this game in week one, and he'll still drop three dimes and lead a game-winning touchdown. That's how good this guy is. Let's just send love back home and hope everything's good.
Now, what's weird is there was a bit of the report from Ian Rappaport that this was apparently something that had been discussed between Brady and the Buccaneers prior to training camp or early in training camp. So it's not like something that suddenly happened per se, unless it was a possibility of something he brought up. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but it could be you brought up the possibility of something and then needed to take time off to address it, or that this was something that was planned all along. But according to the Bucs, it sounds like they not only support it, but were aware of what was going to happen.
You've heard of a veteran day off?
Yes.
This is a veteran, like, weeks off.
This is a Tom Brady or the GOAT. You know what? We'll see you in September, my man. Have fun.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. Tonight, Major League Baseball, the Cubs and Reds will play in the Field of Dreams game. What's the real headline?
Good luck getting your dad to do anything tonight.
Glued to the TV.
Glued to it. I can't wait. Maybe the funniest thing I've heard, Bump, was you talking about your kids asking questions during Tuesday night's game with, like, this huge moment where you're hanging onto every single pitch, goosebumps, your heart's pounding, and it's like, Dad, who's the baseball logo? Who invented baseball?
Oh, man, this is going to be awesome to watch. I can imagine what the presentation of this game is going to look like. I enjoy, like, the drone footage of flying over the diamond and watching the players walk out of the cornfields. It's going to be cool, man. I'm going to make my kids watch this one, and they can ask as many questions as they want with this.
That's a good one to watch with the family. Question for the two of you, and I'll think of my answer, too. I feel like I had chills, goosebumps, during the first Field of Dreams game because I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I didn't know if they'd do it in a way that made you feel something.
You thought it'd be kind of kitschy?
I did. I thought it would be kitschy, and it wasn't. I thought it was wonderful. It was amazing the way that they were walking out of the field. I thought they did a phenomenal job. What was the last thing in sports that gave you chills? Or something that you think about and it did, but just immediately maybe comes to mind?
The last time I cried watching a game.
Yeah.
Kobe dropping 60, his last game against the Jazz. Hitting the game winner at the elbow. That's where Kobe made a shot. I'm sitting there I'm not even on the couch. I'm sitting on the ground like a kid just watching this all go down.
The TV, exactly. Looking up at it.
I'm like, this is it, guys. This is it. So, yeah, it was Kobe.
That's a good one. Curtis, what about you?
Man, last game where I was like moved to emotion, moved to strong emotion.
Or it could just be like I get chills.
I will say last year when the Mariners were making their late season push and Mitch Haniger hits that single to take the lead against the Angels. I think that was, game 161? I got chills watching that for sure. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those moments where I was like, Bumba, there was no way I was going to be sitting down on the couch watching that. I got up, stood up, and pumped my fist when that ball went through the infield. That was like one of the last moments I've gotten chills when watching sports. Now, Stacey, you said you were worried that last year's game was going to be a little kitschy, little corny. There are rumors tonight that there will be a holographic Harry Carey singing the seventh inning stretch.
Stop it. Stop it. Why are we doing
is
holograms?
That
Why
the
are we doing
most,
holograms?
Or is that the most cringe thing possible to happen tonight?
Not the most cringe. Holograms in general, I feel like, is... It's like
it's played out?
Well, no, it's not even played out. It's like Dippin' Dots when we were like, oh, ice cream of the future, you guys. It's like our version of what the future is, and it just looks weird. It never looks that natural. It feels kitschy. It feels like something where it's like, you guys remember Smart House, that Disney movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It, holograms feel like if in 2002 someone was like, hey, what's 2022 going to be like?
Holograms you,
yeah,
everywhere.
Holograms. It's just, it's not it, man. I mean, obviously, I'm going to watch. My answer, by the way, to this was going to be one half. So there were lots of suggestions sent in of classic Seattle moments. Beastquake, the double, right? One listener on the Mac and Jack's text line said Super Bowl 48. Of course, 253 says Felix's final King's Court.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah.
What immediately came to mind, because I was, I don't know why, the other day, I was reading Jose Fernandez's Wikipedia page. You know when you get down a Wikipedia rabbit hole?
Yeah.
D. Gordon's home run?
Yes.
That one. I cried.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, that
There's
one.
There's a really good, like, 10 to 15 minute video that SB Nation did on D. Gordon's home run the day after Jose Fernandez passing. Check it out if you get a chance on YouTube. Just search D. Gordon home run, and it'll probably be one of the first things to pop up.
You'll cry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com. A young quarterback shines. A former Seahawk finds a new home, and the GOAT is MIA. That's next in NFL headlines.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, this hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's take a look around the NFL. We are starting in the East, the AFC East. We'll go to Miami first. Tua was trending this morning. Why? Because the offense for Miami had a solid day at camp today, and Tua had a few highlights. Here's one observation from NFL Network's Cameron Wolf, who was there watching. He said, Tua Tagovailoa delivered a, all caps, dime to Tyreek Hill, 30 yards over the middle between two Bucks first team defenders. The Dolphins and Bucks had a skirmish today, by the way. Literally threaded the needle. Hill caught it one-handed. One of the best plays I've seen from the Dolphins offense all camp.
That's what you expect to see. This is Tua's, like, not last lifeline in the NFL, but this is going to be big for him. If he does not perform this year, then he's a backup for at least a couple years before he earns another opportunity. He needs to make plays like these. This is why he needs to play in this first preseason game. You got to prove it. Come on.
I cannot stress it enough. All right, to Buffalo. Sticking in the AFC East for, we'll go all four teams here. The Bills are favorites to win the Super Bowl this year. Everyone knows that. So it's no surprise that, speaking of players not playing in the first preseason game, Tua, likely not to. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, said Josh Allen definitely will not. Now, Bump, this is one where I can't blame him. Yeah. Tua, get some reps. Yeah. Josh, please stay out of it.
Josh, stay healthy, stay mobile, drop your dimes. You and Diggs are cool. You got a great defense. You're set up to win a lot of games. Different situations, different strokes, different folks.
All right, to New England. We have a retirement here. Pats running back James White is calling it a career. The former fourth-round pick out of Wisconsin played eight seasons in the NFL. He finishes his career as a three-time Super Bowl champ, remembered for plenty, but maybe most importantly, the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl against the Falcons. Also, the greatest Super Bowl comeback.
Great career by James White. Helped me out a lot in fantasy football a couple of years as like RB3 or whatnot, but... Man, way to go out. Three-time championship, greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Appreciate you, James
Curtis,
White.
You don't play a lot of fantasy football. You play fantasy baseball.
I used to play fantasy football.
I do play fantasy football. There are absolutely those players where you hear them. Like, for some reason, Giovanni
Bernard.
Like,
oh, man, they got with us on my team a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah,
he helped me win a championship.
Like, I know this guy exclusively from when I drafted him and it worked out, or when I drafted him and it didn't. And that's not every player, right? Some players surpass that even if you draft them. Like, I've drafted Patrick Mahomes before, who was great for my team, but I don't know him just from that. But then there are players you associate with a winning or losing
fantasy
football season.
I played fantasy football the year the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, and one of the big scorers on my team was Broncos running back Knowshon Moreno.
Yeah.
Which, like, you never heard about him after that season, or really before then, but that one year, I think he scored like 13 or 14 touchdowns, had like close to, I think, 1,500 total yards. Like, he was a big contributor on my team that year. I always associate No. Sean Moreno and what he's ever done in his career with that one season of fantasy football on my team.
All right, let's head to the NFC North for this one. This one with the Lions, a rookie receiver named Jameson Williams, who played at Alabama. At Alabama, he was number one, okay? So he liked being a single-digit number, and initially he had a double-digit number, and he wanted to switch to ideally a single-digit number, but 1 through 8 are already taken. That only left number 9, where... Yes, you guys are doing the math in your head. Matthew Stafford, former number one pick for the Lions, obviously a franchise quarterback for years and years and years, was the last player to wear that number. So wanting to pay his dues and pay his respect, Jameson Williams reached out to Matthew Stafford, who's no longer with the Lions, by the way. Like, you don't have to ask. He reached out to Matthew Stafford to ask if it was okay that he wear number 9. Stafford gave him the okay. So congrats to Jameson on his new jersey number.
I guess. I mean, that's a good move, I guess, to the vet. But you ain't there no more. You just won a Super Bowl in L.A. I ain't asking for nothing. It's available. I'm taking it. Come on, man.
I like the idea of, like, this is when those two little leaguers hugged. One little leaguer hugged the other one, and Curtis just like, come on.
Look.
Look. It's
there didn't need to be a hug. You could just say, I'm good, man. I don't, no hard feelings. There did not need to be a public display of affection.
I'm done with the two of you. Let's go to the AFC North in Pittsburgh. Mitch Trubisky will get the start for the Steelers this Saturday against the Seahawks. By the way, Mitch Trubisky, the favorite to land the starting gig in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that makes sense. He should be the favorite. He's had some years in the league, not successful years, but he's over there with the Bears. You got Mason Rudolph, you got Kenny Pickett over there. No reason to rush Kenny Pickett into a situation where they are clearly rebuilding. They got a good defense. They do have a good running back, a good receiver, Deontay Johnson and Najee Harris in the backfield. But you got to go with the vet. Give him a chance to prove himself. And in case of emergency, you break glass and you go with one of the backups.
All right, to the NFC South. We're going to go to Tampa and Carolina. Let's start with the Panthers, though. Reporter Ashley Sterling captured a video of Baker Mayfield playing rock, paper, scissors with a fan. Why? The fan asked if he could have Baker's bucket hat, and Baker said, I'll play you for it. So rock, paper, scissors, Baker lost, fan gets the bucket hat. Christian McCaffrey did the same for a pair of cleats, so lots of fun happened in between players and fans. Meanwhile, with the Panthers, head coach Matt Rhule has still not named a starter between Mayfield and Sam Darnold, though reports out of Panthers camp are that Mayfield is far and away the better quarterback.
One good PR move by Baker Mayfield and Christian McCaffrey for doing that. I feel like if Baker would have lost... or one, he still would have given him the bucket hat. So good for him. As far as waiting, why are we waiting? Why do we do this as head coaches? By now, in this situation specifically, Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, like it's different over here in Seattle. Even Seattle has named a starter for their preseason game. But you know you're going to go with Baker Mayfield. You don't bring him over there to sit behind Sam Darnold. I don't know why they play this game in a situation like this. In Seattle, I would understand more even battle. But yeah, it's got to be Baker.
Sticking in the AFC South, I got one more story here. We talked about it a bit earlier, but let's get back to it. Tom Brady, out in Tampa, taking an excused leave of absence from the Bucs for personal reasons. The team didn't disclose any more information, obviously, other than to say Brady's expected back after the Bucs preseason game against the Titans. That game on August 20th, by the way. So out for at least 10 days here.
I hope Tom Brady's on a yacht somewhere just enjoying life with his kids
Dan
and his
Snyder
family.
Style, just like,
you know, just saying like, look, guys, this is probably my last run.
Person. I don't need it.
I know the playbook like the back of my hand. Just give me the rock and I'll be fine.
All right. Let's head to the...
By the way, 425 agreeing with you saying that hug was a bit...
Oh, God. You guys, come on.
Thank you, 425.
All right. Let's go to the NFC East here. The Giants are going to be taking on the Patriots in their preseason opener. This story, though, more about the AFC East because Patriots starter Mac Jones not expected to play. Now, Bump, you said that Tua should absolutely get those reps. Fine with Josh Allen not getting those reps, obviously. How do you feel about Mac Jones not starting?
Mac Jones, I feel like, should get a couple reps. Yes, he was a Pro Bowler last year, had a great season, but you have no offensive coordinator. Apparently you don't, but we all know it's Bill Belichick. He's been hands-on with the offense. I would think that Bill would want to see him out there, but if Bill Belichick has that much confidence in this guy, you got to roll with it. Bill is one of the greatest of all time. He knows what he's looking at. I hope it doesn't hurt him.
All right, let's jump to the other side of that battle where former Giants quarterback Eli Manning, shocker, is confident that Brian Daboll and Daniel Jones can turn this thing around this season. Bump, if I'm looking at the NFC East, I'm seeing the Cowboys with a stacked squad, great offense, great defensive weapons. I'm seeing the Eagles, who are like a low-key kind of favorite to sneak in there to the wild card. And I'm seeing Washington, who could go a number of ways either way, is going to be able to get healthier defensively when they get Young back after week four. I am not seeing the Giants as being 1-2 or maybe even 3 in the division.
I don't see it. I do not see it. I'm looking at their offensive weapons. They have Barkley. Barkley needs to prove that he's back and that he can get it done. Got Kenny Galladay, solid receiver. Got Kadarius Toney, solid receiver. But there's nothing over there to where I just say, these guys are back. These guys are in the mix. They have to prove themselves. You never know because things happen and teams exceed expectations. But, yeah, I'm not buying it.
Curtis, there are so many people agreeing with you and your cold, callous heart on this one.
Well,
so upset.
You know? Look.
You're a girl dad, too, man.
What are you doing, man? But the problem is...
Open up your heart.
You're slowing the game up, too. Like, as a former umpire, it's like, let's get on with the show, guys.
Oh, God. All right.
Like, you can say you're fine and reassure the pitcher that I'm okay, no hard feelings. But as soon as you're out there giving an extended hug, that's too much for me.
What a hater. All right. The Mariners have an off day today, but we're going to take a bit of a look ahead at the schedule here. Look at some pivotal games and also look back at what was a statement series against the Yankees. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
This hour, Bump and Stacy, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino, coming up in 15. Three questions we have for the Seahawks preseason opener against the Steelers. I'm going to be out tomorrow, so I'm having this conversation a day early because I'm really excited to talk about this preseason game. Before I get to that, two things. Number one, Curtis, your cold, callous heart is getting plenty of criticism.
Good.
Rightfully so.
This isn't the first time I've gotten the text riled up.
For hating on the little leaguer who went up and hugged the other little leaguer because he was sad that he hit someone and he went up to assure him he was okay.
I'm just saying, pace of play. We got to get this game in.
If it's not my son, I'm saying, aw. But if it is my son, I'm like, man, take your base, dog. You got a game to play.
You guys are both horrible people. Both of you just getting like completely ripped apart here on the text line. Rightfully so. Also on the text line, though, I mentioned Baker Mayfield and Christian McCaffrey playing rock, paper, scissors with fans at Panthers training camp for a bucket hat and some cleats. Someone said, my son played rock, paper, scissors with Julio Rodriguez in the dugout.
Wow.
During a Texas series. I said, who won? He said, Julio.
And he wins at everything.
J-Rod wins everything. Then he said he took a selfie with my son's phone before the game. It was awesome. That's really cool. And also, I have this picture in this thread. There is quite literally a picture of Julio taking a selfie of himself in the dugout. That's really cool. All right. So, speaking of the Mariners, I wanted to look ahead at some of the upcoming series and then take an off day to look back at what we've learned about this team so far. I'm going to say we've learned two very important things, and we're going to just start there, which is number one, yeah, they do still need to add a bat or two this offseason. I'm not going to back down from that one. They're tied for 21st with the Cubs in total runs, 23rd in hits, 18th in OPS, which is actually much better than they were last season. So they've improved, but you're not batting with the cream of the crop. That being said, my other takeaway, my other thing we've learned, when they're at their best, they can beat the best. That formula they had against the Yankees in the wins on Tuesday and yesterday, man, you get pitching like that, you get a bullpen like that, how deep can you get into the playoffs?
Yeah, they've shown that they can hang, you know what I mean? They can hang with the big dogs. Consistently, we shall see. And you're right, they still need to add a bat. They've shown that they are a wild card caliber type of team, but not a championship type of team. Will we take wild card right now after not being in the playoffs in 21 years?
I'll take getting swept in the wild card.
Most definitely.
Series.
I just want to keep playing as long as you can. You know, and I want that to become a part of the culture here with the Mariners to expect to do that. And it has to start somewhere, so that's where it's gonna start. But that doesn't mean you can't get better during the offseason.
By the way, I'm gonna interrupt myself to say we have a message in on the Mac and Jack's text line from the 425. Stacy, love you. Thank you. Bump, love you most of the time. Oh, we love Bump all the time. Curtis, you're dead to me.
Hey, that's the price I got to pay to get these hot takes in. So be it.
Speaking of Curtis, what's something else that we learned about the Mariners while we spent half of this 10 minutes looking back and then before we look forward?
I mean, their bullpen is as good as it was last year, maybe even better, and which is wild to think because you don't have Casey Sadler, you don't have Drew Steckenrider, two guys that were critical to the success of the bullpen last year. Maybe that kind of speaks to the volatility of relief pitching in baseball, as guys can have incredible seasons 1 year and then fall off the next year. But you're seeing guys step up. Eric Swanson, for example, last year he was a good part of the bullpen, but now he's being asked to pitch huge innings. Andres Munoz pitched, I think, one inning last year for the Mariners. I think it was in game 162 when he made his Mariner debut. This year, I mean, God, that inning in extras against the Yankees, he strikes out the side. And nobody really came close to making contact off of him. I mean, that guy just throws gas and has one of the nastiest sliders around, too. I think it's a testament to how the Mariners have been able to develop bullpen arms under Jerry DePoto and under Scott Servais is that they don't have to go out and spend big on relief pitching, which, I mean, I would love for the Mariners to spend. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that.
I would love for them to spend.
But their ability to find cost-effective guys that can produce at the level of guys who are getting paid way more than them, I mean, that's you're taking advantage of you know, your ability to develop talent in that way. Guys like Paul Sewald, who, for example, who we talked to earlier this week, just seeing him become one of the best relievers in the game, and it feels like there are other guys. Penn Murphy, for example, coming out of nowhere this year.
All right, taking a look back and a look forward on a crazy week for the Mariners. That was our look back. Let's take a look forward. Here's the slate of games you got. It's a road trip. You are heading to the south and then to California. So you've got a 3-game set on the road against the Rangers. Again, the first game of that starts tomorrow, off day for the Mariners today. And then you've got another 3-game set against the Angels and a 3-game set against the A's before you come back home. So we don't want to jump all the way to the end of August. But guys, the Rangers, A's, and Angels, I am feeling now, knock on wood just now, good about? Can I say that?
Yeah. And we should feel good about the Rangers. We're 11-2 against them. And I love that Kirby is getting a start against these guys. I feel like he needs a pick-me-up type of game. Mm-hmm. Then you go to L.A. You got Castillo versus Ohtani. That's going to be awesome to watch. And then I feel like we owe the A's one. Did they beat us last time in the last series we played them? Or did
They swept you in this like ugly series up here, and then didn't the Mariners beat them?
They swept the A's down in the Bay, and yeah. I think they've since played up here, and I think the Mariners took 3 of 4.
Okay. All right. So A's, I don't feel as bad against you. I believe, didn't they start the 14 game?
Yes.
Win streak. Okay, yes. A's, I love you, baby. Let's go. Let's get this thing rolling again.
All right. So once again, looking ahead at a friendly schedule. Now, one thing I will say, gosh, I forget who was saying this, but last year it felt like the Mariners sometimes would not beat teams they that they matched up well against and then would be great against teams that they should have struggled against. Now, in hindsight, Toronto probably not as good as we thought, right? Because Toronto was one of those teams where they dominated and we were like, oh, they beat the Blue Jays? Why can't you beat, you know, the Rangers? Why can't you beat these struggling teams? This year, they've been able to beat up on struggling teams.
Yeah.
They've been able to take care of the job and play well in series where they were matched up well.
Well, that Toronto game, that series is personal. Just because we knew what the crowd was going to be like. They're going to be super loud. That's what good teams do, right? You beat the teams that you're supposed to beat. And if you are below the elite, you sneak a couple series against the elite, and that's what they've done. So they're taking steps in the right direction. They've set themselves up to have a run at this wild card thing. That's all you need right now. But it's all about doing what you are supposed to do. And what they're supposed to do, they got to win all these series. What, one, two, three, the next three series, they need to win them all.
From the 206, I agree with Bump and Curtis. If that kid hits you and is that shaken up, take your base and let the next man take him deep. You guys are all horrible
there
people.
It is. Yes.
You're horrible
Always
people,
competing.
All of you. Shame on you.
That's
Shame
it.
On
That's
you.
That's if it's your kid. I mean, if it's someone else's kid,
yeah.
I'm showing love.
Okay, okay.
Good job,
hey,
buddy.
Your kid gets on base, there's an opportunity for, what, a two-run home run right there? That's how you get back at it. That's the ultimate revenge.
It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Three questions we have for the Seahawks preseason opener this weekend. That's coming up next.